Hi, this is Diana Prevost with Happy Gut Healthy Lives, how to heal your gut, reduce your stress, optimize your weight, and promote clear thinking. Today, I have Dr. Kim Dalzell, who is a passionate advocate for advanced cancer patients. She's such a pleasure. I've worked with her for a number of years. She blends traditional medical knowledge, integrative and holistic practices with novel cutting-edge science. She has been a contributor to thousands of people's health with her contributions to Breast Cancer Wellness Magazine, Cure, Coping, Myeloma Today, the Chicago Tribune, D Magazine, and the Ireland Report. She has spoken internationally about nutrition and helping cancer patients find their path to healing. So welcome, Kim, to the program today.
Thank you, Diane. I'm so glad we're connected again. Thanks.
I wanted to just let all of the listeners know, as we know that cancer is one of the biggest autoimmune diseases that we have, and as this topic relates to gut health and autoimmune disease and understanding, Kim is going to specifically help people understand about mastering cancer control, the pathways to healing for cancer patients. So I think a lot of other listeners as well will get a lot of benefit from what she has to say. So, Kim, I'd like to know about your background and what got you into the field of oncology nutrition.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I am a traditionally trained registered dietitian, and it was during that time, those initial years, when I really realized that my clinical education provided a very limited view for cancer patients. And that's when I decided to pursue an untraditional doctorate in holistic nutrition. So I have a bit more of a background in Chinese medicine, botanical medicine, and I've been serving the cancer community nationally and internationally, as you said. It's been over 25 years now. And, you know, looking back, it's so interesting. My first job, they asked me, do you want the cancer unit or do you want to work in the psych and eating disorders unit? And I said, give me anything but the cancer unit. I didn't think I could make a difference. The first day on my job, guess what I was assigned? The cancer unit. And it was really all meant to be, because ever since then, I've had this persistent gnawing that when I learned about typical nutritional therapies for cancer patients, and I just had to always look for the next best answer. And I've come to realize that this is not a profession for me. It's a calling. And so I feel so honored to be part of the healing journey for cancer thrivers everywhere. And I'm really delighted to be on this call today.
That's awesome. And I can certainly relate to what you say, that it's a calling. What key principles do you feel are critical to understand if you have cancer?
I'm so glad you asked me this, because really, the first place to start when you're working with any healthcare practitioner is to ask them, what are your key principles? What do you believe? What is that common thread that's going to take us all the way through any of your recommendations? I really have two key principles that I'd like to impart. The first one is chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery are only half a cancer treatment plan. In addition to the side effects caused by traditional cancer treatments like poor appetite, mouth sores, inflamed gut, there are lingering side effects that impact the quality of life, like chemo brain and neuropathy. And in my opinion, there needs to be a plan to support patients during and after treatment. So it's important to have a plan of bolstering the whole body and taking advantage of all of the various, what I have coined, cancer control pathways. And nutrition plays a primary role in all of this. And as I often will say, cancer treatment is like a tsunami, and nutrition is the palm tree you get to hold on to during the storm. My second key principle is, if your body is cancer-friendly, so if the growing conditions are ripe to grow cancer in the first place, and you can take that for anything, if your body is inflammatory friendly, if your body is blood sugar friendly, whatever the case, if the growing conditions are ripe to cause that situation, that health breakdown in the first place, then it's really important to change your growing environment in order, in this case of cancer, to prevent a recurrence. And most cancers, if they're going to come back, they're going to come back in the first couple of years. So after treatment, it's really important to employ what I call kitchen chemotherapy. So that's using foods and natural supplements to impact you at the cellular level on an ongoing basis. You're constantly putting things into your body that are going to act as kitchen chemotherapy. And we have this evidence to suggest that the first two stages of cancer, the initiation and promotion stage, so before things really get out of control, those stages can be impacted and potentially reversed by diet. And traditional treatment really takes care of what is fast-growing and obvious. And then nutrition helps to take care of what's underlying, undetected, or just simply missed. And when we give our body what it needs on that cellular level, we begin to take control of cancer, take control of the disease process, and change our growing environment.
Absolutely. What dietary habit do you feel is a critical cornerstone to controlling cancer?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's important to recognize that any health issue, whether it be cancer, heart disease, obesity, or diabetes, these diseases are associated with or exacerbated by an inflammatory state. So creating an anti-inflammatory environment, and that happens to be my fifth cancer control pathway, that's imperative. And the key to that anti-inflammatory diet is to focus your plate on plants. So as it turns out, many of the pathways for cancer control require these same plant chemicals to be impacted. Let me give you some examples. Plant chemicals in broccoli, for example, can alter the most potent form of estrogen into a less toxic form that doesn't impact estrogen receptors. You've probably heard about medicinal mushrooms like shiitake, reishi, and maitake, or yellow-orange vegetables and fruits. All of those plant chemicals help to support the immune system, helping those white blood cells to communicate better, kind of like an internal telegraph system. And flax and soy foods have anti-metastatic capabilities. So I call it the decreased spreadability factor, if you will. And I'm going to go a step further and say that you have to eat a wide variety of plants because every color of plant contains different disease-fighting plant chemicals that impact different organs, tissues, cells, specific cancer control pathways. So you have to eat enough plants. And you have to make sure that you have the full rainbow. Now, the USDA, somebody asked me this the other day, the USDA's dietary guidelines for fruit and vegetable consumption per day are 7 to 13 servings. And if there are major inflammatory disorders like cancer, that amount really needs to be on the high end. And the reality is that Americans eat the same 10 foods over and over again. I mean, think about it. What do we all, we have tomatoes, we have cucumbers, we have broccoli. How often do you get beets, papaya, those kind of things? So we're just really very limited in our dietary repertoire. And we don't nearly get enough fruits and veggies every day. In fact, there was a USDA-sponsored research study showing that, and this just makes me sad to say it, overall consumption of fruit and vegetables has remained the same for the last 40, that's 40 years. So I think it's really important for anybody who is wanting to begin to heal with nutrition that they need to find novel solutions to get more plant chemicals into their diet through whole food concentrates, smoothies, botanical medicine. Those are all part and parcel to the protocols that I have put together and that I think is really just so important for everyone to embrace.
Absolutely. And, you know, eating right for your cell type is so important. Can you expand on what that means for everyone?
Yes. Well, you know, let me start by saying that while working in this field for over 25 years, I think everyone would agree cancer is just not a one-size-fits-all disease. So based on thousands of studies, many of them compiled by the American Institute for Cancer Research, I started looking at all of these studies and I discovered that specific nutritional risk factors were associated with specific kinds of cancer cells. And this makes sense because cancers of the breast are treated differently than cancers of the lung with traditional medications, right? So with chemotherapy, mm-hmm. there's specific chemotherapies for specific cancer cells because those cancer cells grow in a certain way or are impacted in a certain way by various medications. So just like with medication, you want to be able to get focused on the dietary patterns that are best suited to control the kind of cancer that you're concerned about. And let me give you an example here. So dairy. For ovarian cancer patients, dairy is not recommended, and not for what you think. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, that would make sense because the hormones that could be in the cow's milk or the fact that animal products increase insulin growth factor 1. Now, those are important considerations for anyone who's health-minded, but that's not what I'm talking about here. Their galactose, the sugar component found in cow's milk, can actually be toxic to ovarian germ cells. So milk, dairy products for ovarian cancer patients, not so great. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, dairy foods show a protective effect for colorectal cancers. I just kept hearing over and over again from my patients that they wanted this prioritized list of what were the most important dietary changes to make based on their kind of cancer, because we can't do everything, right? I mean, we can't do everything that we need to do. So how about we do what is most impactful for what we're mostly concerned about?
Absolutely. Can you just go back and expand on the colon and the different types of cancers, how that would be somewhat differentiating that again between that and perhaps maybe a breast cancer patient?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked me that. You know, the main hypothesis underlying a possible protective effect of dairy products with colorectal cancer really has to do with the calcium content and, to a lesser extent, vitamin D, as well as conjugated linoleic acids. There are sphingolipids, butyric acid, these fermentation products that all help remove cancer-causing or toxic bile acids from the lower intestines. So I'm not talking about getting a full-fat milk product, because we know that saturated fats might increase colorectal cancer risk. Here's what I'm really trying to say. If you have somebody who has colorectal cancer, for example, and they love cheese, they just love it, and it's such a huge, I used to live in the Midwest, and so 15 minutes from the Wisconsin border, you got people who are eating cheese like there's no tomorrow, right? And so rather than say absolutely positively, no, we're going to completely take this away, whereas I might say to somebody with ovarian cancer, look, here's your risk here. Here's the science behind this. It's going to be more important for you to really limit that or avoid it. And if you have colorectal cancer and this is really something you love, let's look for the healthiest versions, whether that be a goat milk or some other kind of alternative that's going to be able to provide just a more protective, prioritized food for you.
So even though there would be things like you can have a general anti-inflammatory diet, in terms of specific foods, you really want to differentiate depending on the type of cancer that you have. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that we can't simply just think of yourself and any change that you might want to make dietarily. There are 1,000 recommendations out there. Wouldn't you want to choose the dietary habits and integrate those particular plant chemicals or botanical medicine that you know is going to be most impactful for what you're concerned about?
Right. And as you're alluding to the cancer control pathways, can you just expand on that further, on the various pathways and how they work to fight cancer?
Sure. So through my extensive work with advanced stage cancer patients, and obviously I've done a lot of research on plant chemicals and how nutrition can impact how genes are expressed. So by connecting all the dots between the genetic mutations that cause certain cancers and the nutrition and botanical medicine that actually impacts those cellular cascade pathways that lead to whether or not something gets triggered on or triggered off, I've combined the 7 cancer control pathways, so the different ways that cancer can be controlled at the cellular level, and each pathway can actually be very targeted. So, for example, the different pathways include your foundational pathway. Now, the foundational pathway is something that pretty much, well, most registered dietitians are going to cover to some degree. They're going to talk about gut health, and I'll expand on that in a bit. But they're going to talk about gut health. They're going to talk about treatment side effects and what can be done. So malnutrition is a huge risk factor in this pathway. So the foundational nutrition piece is core number one. That's the first pathway. The next pathway is hormone balancing. So that's going to be particularly important for cancers that are hormone sensitive, like breast cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer. And that's going to include information also about liver detoxification. By the way, I just want to point out that some cancers that you think would not be on this list for being a hormone balancing kind of hormone sensitive cancer, pancreatic cancer, for example, is on that list. You may not think that, but it is. So the third pathway is immune modulation. And, you know, you talk about autoimmune disease. You don't want to boost immunity. You want to modulate it. You want to keep it balanced. So activating those white blood cells in an appropriate way, you can do that by employing plant-based adaptogens, any number of things. But you're really wanting to be careful not to overactivate the immune system. The fourth pathway is anti-angiogenesis. So that's looking at coagulation factors that help cancer spread, or what we're trying to do with anti-angiogenesis is to stop the spreading, stop the development of blood vessels from growing. So the nutrients used in concert with chemotherapies can actually increase the effectiveness of the chemotherapy. And that's pretty exciting. So individuals with advanced cancers of the breast or stomach, along with some other cancers, really, really need to focus on that pathway. The fifth pathway is anti-inflammation. You know that's a big one. I know that's a big one. So looking at the dietary factors that affect C-reactive protein or specific cytokines, for example, and what dietary components can make alterations in those interleukins. The interleukin are the cytokines that really drive a huge process in terms of cancer control. The sixth pathway is insulin sensitivity. So that's focusing on blood sugar stabilization, reducing dietary insulin growth factor 1. And the last pathway, and this is the one that I'm really most excited about, is gene regulation. So that's where you have the ability, as I said, to turn these genes up or down, just kind of like a light switch. And the phenomenon is called epigenetics. And your cells can be activated toward health or toward disease. And I've looked at the most common genetic mutations associated with certain cancer cell types, cross-match those to the natural compounds and dietary components that have the potential to flip the genetic switch in a positive way. And I've done that for 16 cancer cell types. And again, it's just because you can't do everything. You can't eat perfectly. You can't take every dietary supplement out there. So cancer control mastery really gives you that prioritized, targeted list of what are the most important nutrition actions that you need to take for your kind of cancer. And again, whether or not your concern is cancer, the reality is you want to be able to target what is going to be most effective and most efficient way for me to fight this disease, whatever the disease is.
And as you know, the interview series is about the GI tract. So what evidence have you seen that exists between supporting a healthy gut microbiome and correlating it to cancer patients? And, you know, can you expand on that about how people have cleaned up their gut, so to speak, and where you've seen differences?
Yes. And so, you know, the reality is that this whole microbiome project is fairly new when it comes to, I mean, we've known about gut health, but we're really, really just now getting into how important the gut microbiome is. And that's why I'm so thrilled, Diana, that you're showcasing this summit and helping people to understand. From a cancer standpoint, from the research, we don't really have a lot of evidence as to whether the gut microbiome truly modulates carcinogenesis, the cancer process. But it seems pretty promising. I'll give you a study here in a second, but in the cancer world, it's not called microbiome, it's called an oncobiome. And there's some really interesting studies that are starting to surface. It's pretty new. A couple years ago, there was a study looking at lung, kidney, and bladder cancer patients, and a good majority of those, I think definitely over a quarter of the subjects, as it just so happened during the study period, they were taking antibiotics for really routine things like a urinary tract infection or dental work. And it was just a blip on the intake information that the researchers were collecting. Well, all of these cancer patients were undergoing something called a PD-1 blocker treatment. And when they looked back at the results, they saw that the patients on the antibiotics, which disrupted the gut microbiome, relapsed sooner. They didn't live as long. So the microbiome really is this very delicate ecosystem, and imbalance comes really easily. So the typical Western diet of high fat, high sugar, we know that absolutely correlates to cancer risk. And that can shift the structure of the microbiota within a single day. You're eating a high-fat, high-sugar meal, your gut responds very quickly in a negative way. Whey protein, for example, was found to destabilize gut microbiota. So we really need the right dietary diversity and optimal levels of microbiota to be healthy. It's one of the reasons why I recommend for my cancer patients that they consume fermented foods, prebiotics, taking the right kind of probiotic supplement. Those are all great ways to start restructuring your oncobiome.
Absolutely. Can you give us some examples of people that you've worked with and how you've been able to turn them around?
I think, you know, one of the biggest ways is with fermented foods, because it's kind of interesting. I'm going to give you two examples. First of all, kombucha is kind of a funny thing, you know, so this is your fermenting yeast, sugar, and tea combination together, and a lot of people are doing this on their own now, and there are some individuals who have issues with their liver, where kombucha may not be that great of a choice in terms of a fermented food. You may want to, for one example, I had a patient and she was, her liver enzymes kept going higher and higher and higher. And finally I said, by any chance, are you drinking kombucha? And she said, yes. And I said, go off of that for a couple weeks. I want to get you on sauerkraut, pickles, miso, kefir. I want to do some other things regarding fermentation. But let's go ahead and scale off of the kombucha. And as it turns out, her levels came back down to normal. So sometimes there can be harmful contaminants. And all I say is kombucha can still be wonderful. You just got to make sure that you're really, really careful in the kitchen and how you're making it to make sure everything's nice and safe. But even in terms of offering cancer patients who have a lot of gut issues with bloating, cramping, indigestion, prebiotics that really, I mean, you can have probiotics in your gut, you know, that you're taking in supplementally, but you got to feed them. You got to feed them with good things like inulin and fructooligosaccharides and things that you're going to find in asparagus and bananas and chicory root. All of those prebiotics help to support those probiotics to flourish. And then I think really, really an important thing is, you know, stay away from your mass market yogurts. And I think a lot of people may be listening to this say, duh. They're just really inferior ways to get the active microbes. So I do say that you really want to focus on a high-quality probiotic supplement. Typically, those that require refrigeration, I get a little nervous about. I don't know what the conditions are during manufacturing or transportation, so I'm not crazy about that as a good choice. And there are some really nice shelf-stable probiotics right now.
Right. How can listeners of this interview find more about the Cancer Control Mastery Program? How can they get further information from you?
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking. And, you know, one of my favorite places to send people is my Facebook page, because I'm giving away so much rich content every day. So Challenge Cancer Nutrition, all one word, Challenge Cancer Nutrition is the Facebook page. And for all your listeners, I am giving away a free 15-page guide on the power of plants. I can't tell you, once you finish this report, you're going to be blown away. You think fruits and vegetables are good for you. You have no idea how good they are for you. So starting back to that really initial key principle that I shared was, you've just got to be able to have enough good stuff coming into the system to make a difference, and we can do that through the power of plants. So you can go to my website at challengecancer.com, click on the little circle that says free mini course, and it's all yours.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of this today. And you don't have to have cancer to go to her website. As a disclaimer, the 15-page segment that she's talking about is amazing information for anyone to have, just for prevention and wellness, as well as to reduce any type of recurrence or if you have cancer. So thank you so much for being here today. And we will see you tomorrow for another episode of Happy Gut, Healthy Lives. Bye for now.